Christina Black. I'm the shul of Yotzei Halacha. So I just wanted to sort of just give a brief introduction to who I am and what I do, just to meet everybody. Thank you so much, Rabbi Schwartz, for inviting me to come and do that and to learn with everybody. So again, I'm the shul of Yotzei Halacha, which means that basically I'm a resource here who's trained in the laws of Tara and Mishpacha and Nida and women's health, you know, issues that come alongside those kind of questions. So definitely pregnancy, childbirth brings up a lot of those women's health and halacha questions. So as, God willing, people are going through this process, definitely feel free to reach out at any point. You could email me, you could text me, you could call me. I'm usually pretty good about getting back to people. And it's really great to meet everybody. I'd love to meet everybody more individually after this year is over. So again, thank you, Rabbi Schwartz, for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you. Enjoy. Okay.
thank you for
coming, Dina. Thank you all for coming. I have to, again, because I knew Dina would be here, I actually prepared much more than I usually would for this year, because I'm sort of scared of speaking in your presence. But okay.
What we're trying to do tonight is basically review some of the halachos of pregnancy and childbirth, primarily in terms of Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Nida, but there are some other halachos that come up as well. Just very quickly, during pregnancy there's a practice, not practice, people take prenatal vitamins. First of all, everyone here, B'Shal Tova, if you... It's exciting. Prenatal vitamins. I think it's still taken. I haven't been through this in a few years. But the question about taking vitamins on Shabbos and Yontiv is a question that Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuvas discusses and others. It's not abundantly clear to be makel on taking vitamins on Shabbos and Yontiv, and the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa in Perek Lamed Vav recommends that if possible you should take the vitamin before Shabbos and after Shabbos rather than taking it on Shabbos itself because of some potential Issur Refuah. Now practically speaking, we are make on the Issur Refuah by taking vitamins. It's a huge Tshuva Negus Moshe. He goes through the issues at great length. Practically speaking, we are make on taking vitamins, but if you can avoid it, you should avoid it as much as possible. Again, now there is one question that comes up, prenatal vitamins in terms of whether they are kosher or Pesach. We're not there yet, but we'll be there in 2 months, no? Most prenatal vitamins do not have Passover certification. Around a month and a half from now, I'm going to be started. I'm going to get a million of these questions. Rabbi Schwartz might allow to take prenatal vitamins on Pesach, and there are some different kashrus agencies who have listed, etc. I happen to be a very big make on this. I think that if the vitamins are in pill form, it's definitely okay. If it is in liquid form, so you should try to get one with hashgacha. Again, it's not particularly easy to get, although when I say it's not so easy to get, that means it's not so easy to get in the Heights. In Brooklyn, everything is easy to get. That's the basic yisod, right?
I didn't get them online.
You can get them online. They have this koshervitamin.com or something. It actually does exist. The stuff apparently is worth its weight in gold. The stuff is like one of the most expensive products on the planet, but... Okay, again, some doctors assume that prenatal vitamins are really essential. Other doctors assume that it's kind of a joke. But Sam is shaking his head. Okay, fine. So we'll go on. So generally speaking, anything that's a pill doesn't require any kosher certification. If it's in the pill form, we paskin that pills are not derech achila. Even if there's gelatin in the pill, may ikar hadin, I think you can be makel on it. Again, Reb Chaim Ozer was makel on gelatin in general. The minhag in America developed that people are machmer in gelatin based on Reb Aaron Cutler, but in the pill form, I think there are strong grounds to be makel on the gelatin as well. That's what you wanted to ask, Kasia?
Yeah, because I think that
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those have the gel pill.
So again, a gel cap is different than the pill.
It's a gel cap.
Right? So gel caps is slightly more questionable. I still think that whatever sfer we have that's not considered derech achila still should apply. Basically, no one eats this way. People, eating means I put it in my mouth and I chew it and I taste it. That's eating. When I take a pill and I swallow it, that's not really eating. So I think there's really strong grounds to be make on all of these things. Obviously, if you can get certified, why not? But If you can't, or if it's difficult, so then don't. Okay, let's just talk very quickly. We'll go through these source sheets. Inducing labor. Sometimes doctors like to recommend that labor should be induced. Now, there are various reasons why doctors can do this. Either the doctor is going on vacation, the doctor has a golf game, or something along those lines, or the doctor actually feels that medically you should be induced. And these are very different. Moshe Feinstein, the tshuva that we give here, Rav Moshe basically says that in his opinion, childbirth is not considered dangerous at all. That's what Rav Moshe writes in this tshuva, in Simen Ayin Dalet, in the second paragraph. Rav Moshe writes that God says that there's a mitzvah per revu. God says that you're supposed to have children, and God wouldn't command us to do anything that's really dangerous. So obviously, what God means is that childbirth itself is not really dangerous. And therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, some women die in childbirth. Where? Yeah, but that's because the Gemara says because they did averos. Ashosh averos noshe meisos b'shas. Very same babem malikin every week, right? Inon zihiros benida b'chalad lakas haner. But ultimately, childbirth should be perfectly fine, and childbirth is not at all dangerous. So Rav Moshe writes that childbirth is not dangerous. Nonetheless, it's only not dangerous because you're having a child, not Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to have a child. If, however, you speed up the process, so I don't know if it's not going to be dangerous, says Rav Moshe. If you're speeding up the process, you're having a child before you're supposed to have the child, so maybe in that situation it really is dangerous, and therefore don't induce labor. Based on this fact that childbirth is not considered dangerous, a number of interesting applications come up, which I don't think we really accept lahalacha. Rav Shechter, by the way, holds that you don't bench gomel after childbirth, no? It's not dangerous. It's normal. It's normal life. You have children. In order to have children, you have to go through labor and delivery. So, right? It's normal. It's not dangerous. I think outside of Rav Shechter, and this one, Igris Moshe, most poskim assume childbirth really is dangerous. In this sefer, I call this the Webster's, Rabbi Yisroel Dov Webster is a student of Rav Gustman or something in he's a posek in Brooklyn. So in this sefer, he quotes all the poskim who disagree with Rav Moshe. And they say, what do you mean? We're mechal Shabbos for childbirth all the time. How can you tell me, in fact, we're going to be discussing this at great length? Right? So how can you tell me it's not really dangerous? So effectively, what Rav Moshe says is not fully accepted. Nonetheless, we try not to induce labor unless it's medically necessary. If the doctors say it's necessary to induce labor, we induce labor. If the doctors don't say it, so then effectively we try not to induce labor. Inducing labor, by the way, can be much less comfortable, I'll say this nicely, than non-induced. Labor is never fun. Again, I have not experienced this myself, I have to admit, but watching my wife in labor 5 different times, I can tell you how not fun this process is. It's really unfun. I'm sorry if I'm bursting anyone's bubble. At the same time, at Lamaisa, if you need to induce labor, I should say, is much less fun than non-induced labor. And they put Pitocin in you, so the contractions can be much more intense, and the labor is longer sometimes. It's really not a great experience. So that's another reason not to induce labor, just practically speaking, unless the doctor says you should. Now, I should point out also that there's a discussion in Poskim and Hilchos Milah and elsewhere that if you're going to have a procedure that's not absolutely necessary, you should not do it on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday before Shabbos, or some Poskim say assume on Thursday and Friday before Shabbos. Therefore, if for whatever the reason the doctor says you should be induced, but the doctor gives you a bit of a window, try to be induced on the Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday rather than Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday so that you don't get involved in the 3 days before Shabbos. Similarly, if you have to have a scheduled C-section, right, because 3 days within Shabbos, we are mechal Shabbos for you after you give birth. And if we're going to be mechal Shabbos for you, we don't want to put a person in a situation where you have to be mechal Shabbos for the person. That's why the Gemara says, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch Siman Reish Mem Ches, "Ein mafligin b'sfina." I'm not allowed to take boat rides for 3 days before Shabbos. On Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I shouldn't take a cruise. Rav Schechter has a kula over here based on some articles of Yisrael Tashma and other historians about embarking on the cruise on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But the strict halach in Shulchan Aruch is don't do that because you'll have to be mechal Shabbos if that happens. It was inevitable in their times that you'd be mechal Shabbos once you're on a boat within 3 days beforehand. So therefore, we assume, you know what, don't enter these situations. If you have to have elective surgery, do it on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Definitely don't have elective surgery on Shabbos. I should point out my wife has a friend who the doctor gave her times when to be induced, and she decided to be induced the night of her sister's wedding. The sisters are no longer speaking. Adkan. Don't try that. It's like not a good idea. Fine. So that is labor induction. Anything else to discuss? Let's go on. Skulas. Okay? It was just Tu B'Shvat. On Tu B'Shvat, one of the big skulas have an easy labor and childbirth is that you eat your estrog on Tu B'Shvat. Did anyone try this? Good. Skulas are very weird. It's not really part of our tradition. In all of these books, they have full sections about skulas. I personally am not so into skulas. There's one skula that you go to the mikvah in the 9th month of pregnancy, and you go with a woman who's having difficulty conceiving, and it's a skula to allow her to conceive a child. We strongly recommend not doing this. Mikvahs are wonderful places, not necessarily the cleanest. Why get yourself involved in something that could potentially cause who knows what? Don't do it. I strongly recommend not going to the mikvah in the 9th month. I know someone in this community actually who did, and she says it's like a wonderful thing. She's very happy that she did it, etc. I strongly recommend not doing that. There are other issues that come up. One of the more common challenges I get, actually, is are you allowed to go to the cemetery when you're pregnant? So,
What?
So, in the Chevra Kaddish in Yerushalayim, they don't allow women to go to the cemetery at all. Even the daughters of the Nifter, they say, you stand over here and we'll do the Kvura. The Chevra Kaddish in Yerushalayim is very macher in this. They've become more lenient in recent years because of the amount of Americans who just wouldn't stand for it. But the practice of pregnant women not going to a cemetery is pretty widespread, although it has absolutely no base in Shasan and Poskim, and therefore, practically speaking, unless you know for sure that you have a family practice not to go to the cemetery, no reason not to go. If you're the wife of a Kohen, so then there's the whole discussion that the Shach and the Magen Avraham quote, that Ishas Kohen Muberes, that maybe, again, there are different ways of saying it. Either there could be some tumma for the baby inside the mother's stomach, Iwi Paskin, that tumma below is not matame, and Tara below is not, can't become a problem. So, practically speaking, that's difficult. The pashtus in that Sefer Rokeach is that we're worried that you'll have the baby in the cemetery itself. Therefore, if you're pregnant and you're pretty sure you're not going to have the baby in the cemetery, even if you're the wife of a Kohen, it should be okay. This question about whether you're allowed... Yeah, maybe I won't tell that story. Okay.
Could that be where no pregnant woman sends her results from?
It could be. It's an extension of that. It's possible. I really don't know. Somehow the practice developed like pregnant women don't serve as a kfater at a bris. So that they say, well, to be a kfater is like a skula to have children. And the practice developed that pregnant women don't walk down the aisle at weddings. Not pregnant brides, pregnant women, right? We have to be careful. The fact is, I'm not exactly sure how these practices developed, and all of these practices have no source in Shas and Poskim. In this book, Yad LiYoledes, he quotes that he spoke to Rav Scheinberg, and every one of these minhagim, of these skulas, Rav Scheinberg said, there's no source in Shas and Poskim, don't do it. Even eating the esrog doesn't really make sense. There is another widespread practice that the husband gets psicha when his wife is expecting. Right? Even in Mount Sinai, it's a pretty widespread practice. There is a source for it. It's a chida, only in month 9 when you're nearing extra innings. That's what the chida says. because it's a skula to have an easy childbirth, etc. And this real skula is that during Brich Shmei, you're supposed to add an extra line, v'tiftach li boi boi raisa, v'tiftach ishti, with ease, etc. There's like a whole nusach, if you want, I could give it to you. I did not get psicha, unless like people come over and offer it to me, and then I'm like, okay, fine, you're offering it to me. I never request it. I'm not so into these skula things, I have to admit. But they're always interesting. There are some practices that you are worried about ayin hara. So therefore, people don't mention the name of the baby until the name is officially given. And people don't buy baby items until the baby is actually born. I strongly recommend buying baby items beforehand. The alternative is that right after the baby is born, you're going to be running around like a chicken without a head, trying to purchase the entire... it's strongly recommended that you buy stuff beforehand. I have to admit that my son Baruch, who's now 16 years old, his legal name is Baby Boy Schwartz. And the reason why his legal name is Baby Boy Schwartz is because I tried to be very firm when Baruch was born, and I didn't write his name down on the birth certificate because it's not his name yet until the bris, etc. And Anayama said Baruch does not have a name on his birth certificate. It happened that we were able to get him a passport with his name just because we flew to Eretz Yisrael right after 9/11. And there was absolutely no one in the passport office, and we showed up, we said, we need to get a passport for this little kid, and they're like, okay, what's his name? We said, Baruch Schwartz. They put down the passport for Baruch Schwartz. So I hope I don't get in trouble with the government for saying this on tape. But the fact is that Baruch has a passport with his name, even though he does not have a birth certificate. Yeah?
What's your feeling on sharing the gender of the baby?
It depends on your comfort level. Again, some people are worried... I don't have a problem with it. I mean, some people like to be surprised, or some people like to surprise their parents. It's a personal issue. I'm not so worried about whatever ayin hara there is. And honestly, I don't understand why there'd be more of a concern about ayin hara if it's a boy or it's a girl. I just don't understand that. Okay. What? Yeah. Oh, there are practices based on ayin hara that you don't tell anyone that you're expecting until people actually notice. That's another practice based on ayin hara. Again, we told people that we were expecting pretty early on. Again, close people. I don't think it's a good thing to post on Facebook. I think that's a little bit strange, but whatever. Adkan. Again? It could be that's where it's coming from. Certainly possible. I don't know. I just always, I personally did not have such great compunctions about these things. Now, there are certain segulas that the post can recommend not doing. There are some segulas about bringing a sefer Noam Elimelech or a sefer Torah into the room where the woman is going to give birth in order to have an easy childbirth. I don't know. Don't do it. I will not lend out a sefer Torah from the shul for these purposes. So don't ask. Fine. Let's go on. Preparing for a Shabbos birth. So the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim, Dr. Soloveitchik has this article about it. It's like a very strange time of Judaism, etc. Sefer Chassidim writes, Misha ishto me'uber sigiyah chodesh hachi yispalo shalol teilet ishto b'shabbos shalol yichalol Shabbos. That you should daven not to give birth on Shabbos, that you don't have to be mechallel Shabbos. Similarly, if your daughter is expecting, your daughter-in-law is expecting, you should daven not to have the baby born on Shabbos. I have to admit, I am 4 out of 5. 4 out of my 5 children were born on Shabbos, including number 5, who was born on Shabbos Yom Kippur, which is an all-time record. I got a day off from shul, by the way, not in my contract, but I got a day off from shul for that. The fact is, I never davened not to give birth on Shabbos. I would daven that the baby should be healthy. I think that's very important, that everyone should be well. Again, we all know of stories that sometimes things don't go well. You have to daven. It's very important to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But at the same time, I wouldn't daven not to give birth on Shabbos. You could end up being mechallel Shabbos, so you have to know the dinim. The Magen Avraham writes, based on a Girsa on the Yerushalmi, the Hanish al Hareza Shofich Damim. One of the reasons why we're giving the shir tonight is if I, the rabbi, get asked questions about this, I'm a Shofich Damim. I should be educating the community about the proper procedure for Chilul Shabbos. If you have to go into the hospital on Shabbos, you have to know all of the basic halachos. They're not that many of them, not that complicated. You have to know the dinim. And if it comes up, so you do what you have to do. And that's the halacha, right? But to daven, not to have a baby on Shabbos, it seems to me that there are bigger things to daven for. That's my general understanding. Now, the halacha is that a yoledes is considered cholash yish posakonga, and we're mechalal Shabbos for a yoledes. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, in Shin Lamed, Se'if Aleph. We, technically speaking, you're only called a yoledes, the Gemara says, when one of three things develops, and we'll see these sources later. Either when your friends are carrying you with their arms, or which means basically that you can't walk on your own, or when blood begins to drip, that's when you become a yoledes. And the third simon about when you become a yoledes is when you're sitting down on the birthing stool. Right? Those are three simon when you become a yoledes. But the poskim say that practically speaking, by the time you're sitting on the birthing stool, it's going to be too late to call the nurse, the midwife, the doctor, etc. So you have to call much earlier. If you wait until the time that active labor begins, we'll describe it in greater detail, so you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So therefore you try to call as early as possible, like we'll explain. But we also try to be mema'et the Chilul Shabbos as much as possible. And therefore the Mishnah Berurah writes, Mechalon Elo HaShabbos, you turn to the side, top of page 2. So Mishnah Berurah quotes some different Sefer Chassidin. Min haro'oi le'isho shehigi achodesh tes lahazman b'cho erev Shabbos, ko adram hanitzrechem lo'adashem yizdamin le'idosa b'Shabbos o'tiztach mechalon Shabbos. You should prepare as much as possible so that you don't have to be mechalon Shabbos. Prepare as much as possible. What that means is that you should have all the lights on in rooms in the apartment where you might have stuff that you need to take with you. You shouldn't have to turn on the light on Shabbos if necessary. I think what this means also is that you should call a cab company, Erev Shabbos, find out how much does it take to get a cab from our apartment to the hospital. Now, alternatively, this is what I used to say, the new thing is Uber. Uber is slightly better, actually, than calling cabs, because if you call a cab, you have to pay money, right? Uber works that you just push one button, and everything happens automatically. It's like magic, right? Suddenly, all the money's gone from your bank account. It's Nisim in the flies, right? But the fact is, you should prepare as much as possible Erev Shabbos to be Mamat Chilul Shabbos, which means put the phone numbers in your phone, so that you can push as few buttons as possible. Every additional button that I push on Shabbos is an additional Isser. If I have it on speed dial, so I'm only doing one thing. Put it on speed dial, so that you have fewer numbers that you have to call when necessary. So you have the doctor on speed dial, the midwife, whatever you're using, you have that on speed dial, and you have the Uber, the cab company, whatever you're doing, you have that on speed dial also. You are preparing for Shabbos for a Shabbos birth as much as possible, yeah.
Just talking about making calls and calling a cab, is it preferable to do that for yourself? Is it preferable to have someone do it for you?
Again, if you have a non-Jew around and there's no delay whatsoever, saying so you have a non-Jew do it for you. If not, you do it yourself, or your husband does it, or somebody does it. Again, technically speaking, you're 100% allowed to be mechalal Shabbos for Yoledes. We'll speak about the details in a few minutes. For Yoledes, you have to do it Ayidei Shinui, if possible. If time is not urgent, so you have to employ some sort of shinui, but practically speaking, yeah. Now, what this means for us practically is that, yeah?
Sorry, is there any preference for a landline versus a cell phone or
I've been thinking about this.
All the posts can discuss like the issue with landlines, and you have to pick up the phone with two hands, or have two people pick up the phone, then put it back down. I think practically speaking, it could be that a cell phone is actually better. And I saw it in this sick there, in the Torah's Hayoledis, in the new edition that just came out last year. He thinks that it could be that with cell phones, there's no Isser D'Oraisa involved, because they only use LED lights. All of our cell phones do not, now they do get hot sometimes. That's why I don't fully understand in his presentation. And generally speaking, a heat-generating device is an Isser D'Oraisa, but he's assuming that cell phones is only an Isser D'Rabbanan, so for a cell phone would be better.
And
right, it hangs up itself, correct. So yeah, you end up pushing fewer buttons, which is also an advantage. So I would say Uber and cell phone. I think that's the way to do it. The Mishnah Berurah's expression is min ha-ra'oy, that it's preferable to prepare everything before Shabbos. Some of the Achronim discuss maybe what you should do is in the ninth month you should spend Shabbos as close to the hospital as possible. So I know people who are delivering, let's say, North Shore, and they spend Shabbos in Great Neck, or right, because it's as close as possible. Rav Schechter actually is where he's from. That's the introduction. So when Rav Schechter's wife went into labor, he had her walk to the hospital. And she was delivering in Columbia. It's not like walking to North Shore. But he had her walk to the hospital. He walked with her because try to be memayit and chalal Shabbos. Most poskim assume Rav Shlomo Zalman has in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa that this is not necessary, that you can stay home for Shabbos as well. And Rav Usher Weiss, in a tshuva that he has in Chilak Aleph, Rav Usher Weiss assumes that you don't have to stay near the hospital. He says that the language of the Mishnah Berurah is actually different than the language of the Sefer Hasidim. The Sefer Hasidim in the next source sounds like you have to do these things on Friday. The Mishnah Berurah says min ha-ra'oy, it's preferable. Once you're dealing with what's preferable, so then we also have to take into account your experience of Shabbos, the onig Shabbos that you'll have, and therefore therefore Reb Usher Weiss says, you know what, stay at home, have your onig Shabbos, certainly if you have children. I think to move away is very difficult, although I should point out the poskim will say that if the labor actually begins on Friday, or you have a strong suspicion that the labor is beginning Friday afternoon, go into the hospital before Shabbos to be Mamayit Chol Shabbos. When our daughter Bruria was born, it was a Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach, she shares the same birthday as I have. So when Bruria was born, around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my wife's water broke. And then, after your water breaks, basically you can develop an infection if you leave it for too long. So you call the doctor usually right after the water breaks, and the doctor will say, you know what, you should try to come into the hospital, something along those lines. So we went into the hospital on Friday. We went into the hospital in a much more leisurely way, and we were there, and she began to really labor right around the time of Hadlakas Neros on Shabbos. My wife licked Shabbos candles. We'll talk about that in a minute. You should light Shabbos candles in the hospital. The hospitals give you these little Shabbos candle light.
Not real candles.
What? Not light a real candle in the hospital, right? That would be bad. You would probably get kicked out of the hospital or something. That's not a good experience. We paskin that you can light Shabbos candles on electric lights, Meikar Hadin, with a bracha, if it's an incandescent bulb. So that's what you do. We used to bring a little nightlight with us to the hospital. And you can light on that nightlight. I think that's actually a good way to do it. Again, but if you know that the baby's about to come, so you go into the hospital on Friday. Now, part of preparing for a Shabbos birth involves that you pre-register in the hospital. Do not fill out as much paperwork as you can. Fill out everything before necessary. So you don't want to have to fill stuff out. If you go into the hospital and the stuff isn't filled out, so then they're going to get involved in serious questions about any procedure that they won't do without signing. So technically, you're allowed to sign. But you're not allowed to sign on Shabbos to save money. So that means like insurance forms, you couldn't sign on Shabbos. And then the bill would hit you for like $95,000. You don't want to do that. So pre-register as much as possible. Part of the pre-registering, this was like my kunz, that I came up with, when babies are born, usually they, I think they still do this, they have like a little card with like a pink outline, if it's a girl, a blue outline, it's a boy, and they have your fingerprint and the baby's footprints, no? And that's usually what they do. And they give it to you as like a souvenir afterwards. Now, fingerprinting on Shabbos is an issur d'oraisa of kosev. So you have to, when you pre-register, if possible, you have to try to ask to do the fingerprints then. If they don't want to do that, so then you can refuse the fingerprints. Similarly, sometimes they ask you to sign your name on your bracelet, on the baby's bracelets, that they make sure that it's the same baby. Or in different hospitals, they have different procedures. In some hospitals, they have like a number system. I think this is more common. If they ask you to sign your name, that's a serious iser d'oraisa of kosev on Shabbos. And there's a whole discussion in this sefer, the Torah Hayoledes, that maybe you can sign your name on the hospital to solve a shaila of mamzerus later on. Because if you don't if you don't sign your name, you're not going to know it's your baby, maybe someone else's baby is going to be a shaila of mamzerus, or you're allowed to violate Shabbos. This is Reb Yitzchak Zilberstein, by the way. He's a son-in-law of Reb Yoshev. He's wild. He has like really wild things. He has a long discussion about whether you can sign your name to solve the question of Mamzerus. Practically speaking, you can't. Practically speaking, you should do all the paperwork before Shabbos. You should not do anything on Shabbos. Now, part of preparing for a child, for childbirth on Shabbos, is that you prepare a bag. On Erev Shabbos, inside that bag, you put all of the items that you might need. Whatever you might need, you put in the bag. So you put in a change of clothes. There's a discussion in the post going to be allowed to put a siddur in the bag or not. Generally speaking, the Minchas Yitzchak over here gives, in the next tshuva that I give, he says maybe you shouldn't bring a siddur because it's not really necessary. You should try to explain to the Yoledes that there's a bigger skula to carry less items on Shabbos than there is to say Tehillim, than there is to Davin, that his approach. Generally speaking, though, I think we're makel to carry anything in the bag, even items that you won't need on Shabbos, if it's the type of item that will reassure you by having it. Let me give you a case. One time, I forgot which child this was. I think it was Rina. So my wife went into labor late Friday night, and the question was, like, we're going to walk downstairs. She's still pretty mobile on the way to go to the hospital. We're going to walk downstairs Friday. We sent the kids away for Shabbos beforehand. So we'll walk downstairs. Not a problem. Do we take the cell phone with us? Now, carrying a cell phone on Shabbos is technically an issur of muktzah, no? You're allowed to carry a cell phone. We're not going to use a cell phone on Shabbos. Are you allowed to carry the cell phone? So my wife is like, you know, I'm going to be really nervous if I go downstairs at 4 o'clock in the morning without my cell phone, because what happens if I have to go back up? And I don't want to have to go back up. So the Gemara says that we're mekel for Yesuve Daita. Right? The Gemara over here, in the underlined part of the next source, if a woman in childbirth needs a candle, her friend lights a candle for her. The Gemara says that even though it's a blind woman, still we allow you to light the candle because yisuva miyasa daita, because it will relax her. Any item that will relax you, technically speaking, is a mutter on Shabbos. For a yoledes, and this, some poskim assume that this kula of yisuva miyasa daita is true only for yoledes. It's not true for regular pekuach nefesh on Shabbos. I'm not convinced that that's correct, but we can discuss that a little bit later on. The fact is, Yisuva Miyasa Daita, the Gemara says, we're Megal, and certainly for Nisid Rabbanon, we're Megal Yisuva Miyasa Daita. That would mean, I thought, that to carry the cell phone with you, to put the cell phone in the bag with everything else, should be permitted, because it will relax you. Right? And what are you worried about? You're also worried that you're going to be on the road to the highway and maybe the car will break down. If you have any fear whatsoever, so it's Yisuva Miyasa Daita, and therefore, you're allowed to do it on Shabbos. Obviously, you carry the items that are necessary. Items that are not necessary, if you'll have the item in the hospital already, so you don't carry it. But that's the basic halacha. Now, when I say you carry, we live in a community where we have an Eruv. That really means that you're not carrying. I think everyone here lives inside the Eruv. Right? If you live inside the Eruv, so technically speaking, you're not carrying anything. The problem is the hospital is outside the Erev, no? So when you get to the hospital, you'll have to have the guy carry the bag in for you. Usually what you do is you leave a few dollars on the side of the bag to give the guy a tip. The assumption is that all the cab drivers in our area are non-Jewish. That's the assumption. If you happen to get a guy and you say, Shalom Aleichem, my name is Shmerel, so you try to run out of the cab and get a new one. But in all likelihood, the cab driver is not going to be Jewish. What you should do is you should go to the hospital with a non-Jew, and when you get to the hospital, you can carry the bag down yourself. You get to the hospital, ask the non-Jew to carry the bag in for you. The non-Jew should do all malacha for you, because even though we're treating you a little bit like a chole sheyesh bo sakana already, but at the same time, like the Gemara says, kama de'efshel shnuyim mishaninon, we try to do things as indirectly as possible. Which means if a guy can do it for you, the guy does it for you. Right? So what you do is the guy carries the bag in for you, and that way you're not doing any of the Isser of Hotza'a on Shabbos. The guy should also open the door to the cab for you. When you open the door to the cab, the lights go on. So the guy does all these things for you. It's really not that complicated. You just have to be aware of what to do. Now try not to go by yourself. Try not to drive yourself to the hospital. If you want to drive yourself to the hospital, you end up having to know a ton of Hilchos Shabbos. And all of these Svarim have ideas. You know, you have to take the dome light off of the car, and you have to have as few things in the car as possible. And there's a discussion in the postgame about how to stop at a stop sign in a situation where you know for sure no one is coming the other way. Don't get involved in this. What you should really do is, again, if you have to drive yourself, you drive and you drive normally. Don't drive the same as if it's a Wednesday. Don't try to come up with all these cheshbonos. There is a huge literature about driving to the hospital. Is it better to take a small car or a large car? A small car, basically, will use up less gas. You'll have to push the gas pedal less than a large car. So some folks can say using a small car is better. And then they come up, and this book, the Torah Hayoledes, he has a whole complicated theory about what's the best way to go. He says a motorcycle is better than a car. And even better than a motorcycle is if you ride on horseback. And even better than riding on horseback is if you ride a bicycle to the hospital on Shabbos. Right? Yeah, it's great. Ride a bicycle. Assuming there's an Eruv. If there's no Eruv, then there's a further shayla about riding a bicycle on Shabbos. First of all, I remember when we were expecting Baruch, like 16 years ago. So I was learning these halachos at the time. I mentioned this. It's a big mistake. Never mention these types of things to Rabbi Danny Rapp. So as I'm walking with my wife in the street, and like she's clearly 9th month, like nearing having the baby, so Rabbi Rapp screams out across the street, Heil Silver, away! That was like his way of trying to be funny. Like, oh, we should take a horse to the hospital. Go with a cab. That's the normal way of going. And I think that makes the most sense. Okay, now when do we get involved in these things? So effectively, here, let's do one more thing. Once we're talking about Yisuv HaMiyas V'Daita, once we're talking about things that relax you, which we said is permitted, even to light a candle is permitted, even if you're blind, that means we are Mekel under Eraisas for Yisuv HaMiyas V'Daita, but nonetheless, Efshe D'Shanuye Mishanina. Nonetheless, you should try to do things with a Shinoi as much as possible. Doulas. So a doula is a woman who helps you give birth. Doulas have a very high success rate. There's a 45% less likelihood having a cesarean section if you use a doula than if you don't use a doula. The contractions are shorter by 25%, according to the numbers that I saw. Forceps delivery is a decrease 34%. Epidurals is a decrease, depending on the study you look at, either 10% or 60% when you use a doula. So that's a big gap, I know. But the fact is, having a doula is a does have some real medical benefit. Certainly having a doula is included in the Suva Miyasadaita. There's no question that it makes you more relaxed to have a doula. Can the doula do a do'iraisa on Shabbos? There is one doula in the Tinek area who got a kula from an unnamed posek that she drives to the childbirths. I recommend using non-Jewish doulas. There's a huge literature. I give you some of the sources over here in the source sheets. I give you some of the sources about in Tradition in Spring 2008 in Tchum in Volume 30. I give you some of the sources. The question as to whether Yisuvim Yasvedaita were make on Dairaisas or not make on Dairaisas, the Gemara seems to say that we are make on Dairaisas for Yoledes. But it could be that we're only making on the Doraisa for Yoledes later on in the process. The Gemara says, "I'm Haisat Tzvicha Laner," when you need the candle. That could mean at the time when you're about to give birth, so then we're allowed to light a candle for you. But earlier on, it could be we're not making on Doraisas. That's what the Tzitz Eliezer has, others have that also. So to be making on the Doraisa, to call the doula early on, is not so simple. It's not so simple. So I would recommend that you can use a doula, and if you want to use a doula, wonderful. I think it has real benefit. Try to get a non-Jewish doula. The question is, some of these practices have like one doula that's Jewish, one doula that's non-Jewish, no? So I think we should tell them is that you'll use the non-Jewish one. If the non-Jewish one isn't available and the Jewish doula comes on her own, she's coming on her own, like you're not going to say go back home, right? You want the doula there, but at the same time, I think a doula is helpful, but try to use a non-Jewish one, if possible. Yeah?
Are you going to draw a distinction between a Jewish from and Jewish non-from?
So, some of the Achronim say that if you use a Jew, you should use a Jewish from one, as opposed to a Jewish non-from one, because a Jewish from...
Do you want to
eat? Yes, please. Because the Jewish from one knows that it's Shabbos and knows that they're being Mechal Shabbos Beheter, and the non-from one doesn't know it's Shabbos and they think it's a Tuesday and they might come to be Mechal Shabbos otherwise, etc. Again, it's a preference if you can to use a from one over a non-from one. Those are the only choices, but still you should use a non-Jew over a Jew. I think that's a stronger preference. Okay. The issue of Yisuv Miyasvedaita also comes up. Yeah, actually, I'm sort of not going in order, but when it says when to call the doctor, so you call the doctor earlier on. You don't wait until you're in active labor. You call the doctor earlier on. There is a difference between first babies and subsequent babies, no? Generally speaking, labor goes quicker with subsequent babies than with the first baby, which means that the active labor with the first baby tends to be around 40 minutes or longer. With subsequent babies, it's generally less than 40 minutes. Sometimes you have like these things that can come really quickly, both with first babies and with last babies. That can be very dangerous in some ways if the delivery comes very quickly. The amount of time that you're laboring also, first babies tends to be longer than subsequent babies. You call the doctor, generally. You begin to feel contractions that are at a steady clip. Usually, we say that if you begin to feel contractions around 15 minutes apart, that's a good time to call the doctor. Some recommend a little bit earlier, some recommend a little bit later. These are, you ask your doctor, when should I call you? That's what you do at the beginning, and then you follow suit. Yeah. Does it really help? Is it really necessary? I mean, I think... What?
The doctors ask you for that permission when you call her.
Meaning if you feel like you're not sure exactly what's going on, you want to like time it better.
Uh-huh. Interesting question. I think, generally speaking, I'm old school. Like, these things didn't exist when I was at this stage of life. I think, technically speaking, if the doctors feel it's necessary, you can use it. You should do it ayidei yashinui. But right, so I think it's better to try to look at the clock if possible. But if there's some concern that you won't remember, etc., and if you're going to be nervous because of that, because the doctor said you should have the app, so then I think you could do it ayidei shinui also. But you shouldn't really begin this process until you're at contractions at a steady clip. Generally speaking, the Braxton-Hicks contractions can come a long time before. They have absolutely no connection to real childbirth. It's a thing, whatever they are. But I would say that once you're around 15 minutes and the contractions are coming regularly, you call the doctor, and you ask the doctor, should I come in? Or you ask the doctor before, and some doctors say 20 minutes, whatever the doctor says, you call the doctor at that point, and the doctor will tell you whether or not you should come in. You don't wait until it's later, because ultimately, at that point, it's going to be too late. You want to go into the hospital at the right time, but not too early. Now, this issue of Yisuvei Daita that we mentioned, that we're makel because for the Yoledes, it gives you more relaxation, it relaxes you, that's why we're makel to even light the candle for the blind Yoledes. That's the case in the Gemara. For us, practically speaking, the question is whether Yisuvei Daita helps on the Iraisas or not. By other types of Cholesh Yishbo Sakana, I give you a few sources. But the issue practically for a Yoledes is, can the husband go in the car with you to the hospital on Shabbos? So almost everyone is makel on this. Even though Rav Moshe Feinstein is not abundantly makel on it, right? And this true for Rav Moshe, the bottom of page 3, going over to page 4, Rav Moshe basically says that you should try to speak to your wife, speak to the woman who's in childbirth, and explain, listen, it's Shabbos, and maybe you don't need your husband to go with you, etc., etc., etc. But if she's still a little bit nervous, then the husband should go in the car with her. Yeah?
More relaxed by having that person there.
If it's Yisuvei Miyasa Daita, technically it's permitted. There is a small discussion in the postgame about does every extra person in the car create an additional isser of having more gas burn? And is there an isser to have more gas burn? Assuming that I push the pedal the same amount of time, but it's a heavier car now because there's additional people in it, so more gas will burn. So there's a huge discussion about whether about Riboy Bashurim is in this, is Dairaisis, and this is Rabbanon. Generally speaking, we assume that with heavier cars, and all of our cars are heavier, so the additional person in the car will not cause more gas to burn. That's what they quote from experts, whatever that means. It won't cause more gas to burn. As such, technically speaking, additional people can go with you. If it will help. If it won't help, so then why get involved in any questions? But if it will help you, so that's what you do. Now, so the poskim say that you can have a car come, and the car can drop the kids off at parents or in-laws or something, and then you go on the way to the hospital. You could do it like that. It's probably better, if possible, to arrange things ahead of time. Have parents or in-laws or friends or unmarried, nieces, nephews, etc. can be very helpful in these situations to spend the Shabbos and take care of the kid. These things can help, etc. Okay. Now, although Rav Moshe is not so inclined that you should be allowed to go to the hospital with your wife on Shabbos, the Chazon Ish, in the letters of the Chazon Ish, letter Kufmem Aleph, the Chazon Ish has an expression, Mizarez ani she yasi'u ima, that I encourage the person to go with her. What the Chazon Ish is basically saying, and in YU we do this all the time, whenever someone has to go to the hospital on Shabbos, we always send somebody with them. The reason is you get much better care in the hospital when you have someone with you. If you're alone in the hospital, Rahman al-Islam, right? When you're alone in the hospital, so things can happen, they don't take good care of you, we really want to make sure that you are taken care of properly, so therefore make sure someone goes with you. There's a discussion in the poskim about having someone go with you to avoid Isurim of Yichud in situations like that, if you have a non-Jewish cab driver or the like. Technically speaking, in our communities, these issues don't come up because we live in cities and there's not really an Isur Yichud at all. One of the discussions that comes up in the postgame is what's better? Is it better to use a doula who, let's say, will do an Isser Da'iraisa on Shabbos, or is it better to not use a doula and potentially use an epidural on Shabbos? Now, epidural, we assume, is probably an Isser Da'rabbanan on Shabbos. There is a discussion in the poskim about giving shots in general. If it's a subcutaneous shot, that's an Isser Da'rabbanan. If it's a shot that goes into a vein, it's an Isser Da'iraisa, because you have to draw a little bit of blood beforehand and not. The epidural goes into the spinal cord. Right? So epidural is a discussion in poskim about whether it's an Isser Da'iraisa or an Isser Da'rabbanan on Shabbos. My personal feeling about this question is that epidural can have more side effects than... I know of someone who had serious side effects, serious complications in delivery because of the epidural. It's rare. It's very rare. But at the same time, doulas have better outcomes in general. So the best option is you have a doula who's driven by a non-Jew. Or you have a doula, if you want to use a Jewish doula, you can ask the non-Jew to drive her, etc. That will solve all the problems, or use a non-Jewish doula. I think that's certainly the best option rather than the epidural. If you look over here in this tshuva, the Shevet HaLevi, so the Shevet HaLevi discusses the question of the epidural and whether it's an Isser D'Oraisa or it's an Isser D'Rabbanon, etc. He writes that he's inclined that you can be make on giving the epidural on Shabbos because we're make for a cholash yish basakana also to do kotzrachim, and we're make that anything that will relax a person, we're make on that as well. So he's inclined that we can be make, but practically speaking, I'm more of a fan of doulas than I am of epidurals. There is another part of the patient, but if I'm, let's say I have, right, so you're saying if I have a non-Jewish doctor giving the epidural, what's the big deal? Correct. But if I have a Jewish doctor, many of the OBGYNs that people use are Jewish. The anesthesiologist is the one who does it. But you have to know the situation. You're right, if it's a non-Jew, correct, so there's no potential derisa. So these tshuvas are all written in Israel, where the assumption is that everyone is Jewish. We're make on the rises for Yisuvei Daita, but we still have Efer L'Shnuye. So the question is, what's better? Right? Do not do an epidural with a Shema. Right. If you're doing an epidural by, like, using your toes to put it in, very bad idea. Yeah. Rebecca? What Sam pointed out is that today we have not, most of the people working in the hospital are going to be non-Jews. So in the worst case scenario, we're doing an Isser D'Rabbanan, for sure. Even if you hold an epidural in theory, be D'Oraisa. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that if you have a choice, in theory, between using a doula or going for an epidural, so I would recommend, both for medical reasons and possibly for halachic reasons, if you have a Jewish doctor, to use a doula. Now you can't get a doula at that point. I'm talking about right now, we're making decisions. No one is in labor right now in this room. No one in this room is in labor right now. And if you are, like, I'm getting scared. Correct. Again? With a doula than it is without. That's correct. Okay. There is a discussion about cord blood banking. Cord blood contains these undifferentiated stem cells, which can be effective in healing diseases later on in life. Many people like to save cord blood. Cord blood can involve certain malachos on Shabbos in terms of squeezing the cord to get the blood out, in terms of the tzoveya, that they put the cord blood into a container that has some other liquid in it. In terms of kosher, they're tying the knot, in terms of total mukta. For us today, practically speaking, in the United States of America, it's not a shaila, everything is being done ayudei goy. The question is this considered a tzorech at all? Because I'm worried about lu yitzuy, or perhaps years later, something will come up. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, I should say. But practically speaking, I think when we're dealing with goyim, everyone is makel on the cord blood banking, even on Shabbos. Because the people doing everything are going to be goyim. If it's in Eretz Yisrael, then it's a very different conversation, and I give you a few marimakomos about the question that's more relevant for Eretz Yisrael than it is for Chutz La'aretz. Fine. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach from the Shmir Shabbos paskins that you can only do the cord blood banking if there's a chola b'faneinu, which is like a classical discussion for koach nefesh situations, that only if you have someone who has an illness right in front of you, then I can do the cord blood banking because it's helping a known chola. But if it's for something that I don't know, so Rav Shlomo Zalman says you can't do it. Again, most people do cord blood banking are doing it for the way future. But there is a possibility, apparently, to do it for someone to use those stem cells right now to help someone else. Is that true?
No, I don't know.
I mean, that's the impression I get. Okay. Any other questions about labor, childbirth, Shabbos issues? Basically, you prepare as much as you can in advance, and you do everything all day you go, and it should go well. You have to, again, when you get to the hospital, you can't push the button for the elevator yourself, if possible, because, right? So you ask a guy to push the button of the elevator for you. If there's no guy around, then you push it with your elbow. Right? These types of situations, it's not that hard to figure out. And usually, you're going to the hospital, things are not so rushed that every second matters. Right, when you're still going to the hospital. Later on, at some point, you will end up in the every second matter stage. That's already a different take on the pikuach nefesh thing, but at this point, we're not there yet. Okay. Let's just talk about the nida issues very briefly. At some point in the process of labor, childbirth, a woman becomes a nida. The question as to when that is not abundantly clear. The Gemara, in terms of being Mechal or Shabbos, we spoke about this Gemara beforehand. So, the bottom of page 5. At what point does Nida set in? And my question mark is in the wrong place. So, the Gemara says, Meimasai psichas hakever. So, Abayi says, when you sit on the birthing stool. Rapun b'reid Rav Yeshua says, when the blood begins to flow. Others say, when your friends carry you when they carry you because you can't walk on your own. That's what the Gemara says. Now, these simonim are hard to know what they mean. When the blood begins to flow, we know what that means. But there is a machlekes harishonim whether the blood is beginning to flow before the other two signs or after the other two signs.
So even so, fast, there's been a lot of blood you might
see at Libra. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Much of the blood that you see might not be this type of blood. This type of blood that's talked about in the Gemara is the actual blood that comes out in childbirth. Right? There is something called the bloody show. The bloody show is technically a cervical mucus plug. The bloody show, according to the vast majority of poskim, does not create nida at all. Breaking water, according to the vast majority of poskim, does not create nida at all. The water breaks. Effectively, that means that the placenta has opened up. There can be infection. You should call your doctor if the water breaks on Shabbos. Call right away just to find out what to do. But if the water breaks, most poskim assume there's no nida consequence at all. Real blood is real blood. That is the time of this nida, and that I think we know what it is at some level. The other siman, and we don't know what it is. When you sit down on a birthing stool, so in our world, if you give birth with a midwife, so the midwife will let you walk around and eat and drink and everything is fine, and at some point they'll say, you want to have the birthing stool, or they give you like a ball or something, and you could crouch on the ball and try to have the baby that way. If you use a midwife, I think Yashval HaMashber is somewhat similar to what it meant at the time of the Gemara. But if you're using a doctor and they make you labor in bed, in most cases, right, some doctors are becoming more easygoing about this now. But most doctors still want you to labor in bed. So you're in bed for a long time beforehand. It's hard to know whether that is called the Yashva Al HaMashber the Gemara discusses. When your friends carry you because you can't walk, well, there are some women who can't walk at all during the 9th month of pregnancy. That's just the reality, right? You're very large. It's very uncomfortable. You can't walk. So it's hard to know. It's hard to know what these signs really are. Generally speaking, we paskin that you can become a nida even before blood comes out, providing the contractions are coming 2 to 3 minutes apart, or dilation is around 4 centimeters. That's the psak that they quote in the book Marek Kohen and Hochos Nida. I think this is a pretty mainstream psak. Rabbi Neuberger quotes that Reb David Lifshitz used to say, only when contractions are 7 minutes apart, that's when you become a Nida. That's much earlier. Usually speaking, most poskim assume that what we're trying to do in this Gemara is we're approximating what's called active labor. Now, earlier labor you have contractions, and then you really begin to have the pushing contractions later on. What we are assuming is that the earlier contractions don't render you a nida. You only become a nida at the pushing contractions. But we're not exactly sure when it is. Now, sometimes the doctor will check you. If the doctor ends up with blood on the doctor's finger, by checking you, there's a big discussion in poskim whether that renders you a nida. Some are machmir on that. Stripping of the membranes can render you a nida also. Again, everything here is a machlokes haposkim. But generally speaking, we're assuming that once you're in active labor, that's the definition of nida. Now, there is a discussion in the poskim whether a husband is allowed to be present in the labor and delivery room, because once your wife is a nida, so you're not allowed to look at the uncovered areas of your wife's body. The minhag in America clearly is that we're mako. But Moshe Feinstein basically says that he is inclined to be mako af belot zorech eini ro'eh iser. He says even if it's not necessary, he doesn't see an iser to be present in the labor and delivery room. You try to have some sort of screen. You try not to look if possible. You try to have a screen if possible. You don't look. That's the basic issue. But practically speaking, we follow Rav Moshe, not the Minchas Yitzchak, who assumes that a husband should not be present when his wife is in labor and delivery. That's the approach of Minchas Yitzchak, but it's not really followed in our communities. I remember, I think Rabbi Meir Twersky once went to the payphone in Yeshiva to call his wife after she gave birth to a baby. That's not standard practice in our communities. Husbands are present. At the same time, even though we're mekel on the husband being present, we're not mekel for the husband to hold his wife's hand during childbirth, unless it's really a pekuach nefesh situation. Rav Duchovsky, who was one of the dayanim in the Yerushalayim Beis Din, had a kula years ago that the husband can hold his wife's hand during nida, especially if the husband's wearing gloves. He was mekel. It's not accepted lahalacha. It's not Ksav HaHalacha. We assume that there really is Derech Yiba, because if it would be anyone else holding the hand, so there are other people who could hold the hand. You could have, again, the husband's, the only reason why the husband's hand holding matters more than other people's precisely because it is Derech Yiba. So that's why I think that would be a problem. The Minchas Yitzchak in one of his tshuvas really does not like this kula of Rav Duchovsky for the husband to hold his wife's hand during the childbirth. Okay, that's the issue over there. Now, one of the questions that comes up in the poskim is what happens if a woman goes into labor and then the labor stops? Does she become a nida? So the Piskei Tshuva quotes, I give you a source over here, he quotes a tshuva, Nachla Shiva is quoting the Minig in Poland, that a woman who sits down the birthing stool and then the birth pangs stop, so she becomes a nida from the time she sits on the birthing stool, end of conversation. That's what Nachla Shiva says. And the Sidri Tara and the Chavis Das both disagree. The Chavis Das disagrees because he says, no, just sitting on the birthing stool doesn't make you a nida if nothing comes out. And the Sidri Tara disagrees because he says, Igloyim Osalam Afreya, what emerges is that you weren't a nida. These weren't birth pangs. That's what the Chavis Das assumes. Technically speaking, in Poskim, we are makel that you don't become a nida if you sit down on the birthing stool and then everything stops. We're makel that you do not become a nida. If, however, it's the type of false labor that you sit down on the birth stool and then they have to give you something to stop that false labor, that's a more serious shayla. Sometimes I actually recommend drinking wine if you go into early contractions. No? Usually you try not to drink wine during pregnancy. No? But one of the things that wine does is it stops contractions. It's like an... If they have to stop it medically, so there's a huge discussion, because in that situation, I can't say Igloi Milsalam Afreya. They actually get involved in Machlokas Sijitar and Chavis Das. That's not a simple shayla. It could be that you become a nida in that situation.
Doesn't matter how far along
you I don't think so.
Well, it has to be
So now, again, it has to be Yashal HaMashber. And is this Yashal HaMashber, or would it have been Yashal HaMashber? Apparently, one of the things that Torah Sayyoledis makes this point is what you see from this conversation is that this Sefer Nachla Shiva is assumed that Yashval HaMashber is not active labor, the way we defined it. He's obviously assuming that Yashval HaMashber is the earlier labor. If you assume it's active labor, so it's exceedingly unlikely that active labor begins and it gets stopped. That would be like exceedingly rare. Correct?
Yeah.
It can happen. I'm not.
But the interesting one is if you had contractions that were, say, 6 minutes apart, which meant the standard, I forget which.
Yeah, I was using, four minutes.
They stopped at 6 minutes.
2-3 minutes.
Then be a
nida. Right.
Holding by the 7 minutes.
Yeah, those types of situations could possibly emerge. It's not. Again, these are not simple questions. We try to. If these issues come up, so we have to deal with them when they come up, the issue of false labor if it gets stopped. Okay, nursing issues on Shabbos, just very quickly, I spoke about this in the... Yeah.
I'm sorry, it can't be real labor that stops, not just false labor.
What? Real labor can also stop, I understand. Right? Well, real labor won't stop on its own. False labor would stop on its own. Huh?
I gotta look that one up.
Sorry? Not sure?
Depends on where it is.
It depends on. I don't know what that means.
You can have labor that's in stage one or two that will can slow down or even stop. It's once the woman reaches transition, it won't stop.
Okay. So assume again. So that's what I meant before, that if we assume that you only become a nida in active labor, as in transition.
Yeah.
So then the whole conversation is moot, effectively. Right? This conversation is assuming that you can become a nida at some point before transition. Right? That was that conversation before. Okay. There's a lot to say about nursing on Shabbos. Effectively speaking, to pump milk on Shabbos and to save the milk is a potential issue d'oraisa. So for many women, this is like one of the most difficult things. that you have to pump milk on Shabbos, you have to pour it all out, and you have to really pump, you have to pump le'ibud. In other words, that the milk that comes out has to be, go straight and be destroyed right away. Some poskim recommend that you put like some soap or the like into the pump on Shabbos. Again, assume that you're not using the milk, right? You can't use the milk if you're pumping on Shabbos. You can nurse on Shabbos. You can't pump on Shabbos and then use the milk unless the baby is really a cholashish basakana. That's not doable. There's a huge literature on this topic, but time is a little bit late, so maybe we won't go into that. Last time I gave this year, I spoke about some of the issues with the brachos that you should recite when the child is born. I guess listen to it from there. The one last topic that I wanted to discuss, which I haven't discussed in the past, and I'm beginning a lot of questions about this, is baby naming. Right? Usually after babies are born, you give them names. That's standard. Sometimes there are disputes which are not really halachic, but people think they're halachic, about who do we name the child after. Right? So the Sephardic practice tends to be that the father names the first child. Ashkenazic practice tends to be that the mother names the first child, and then you alternate after. There are absolutely no rules over here. The practice is that we don't name people after those who are Rishaim, although if someone, a grandparent, let's say, was really not observant, but the grandparents had a name, like a good Jewish name, named after Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak, something like that, so there's no problem naming the child. My understanding is that naming after parents is a kiyum of kibud av va'em. Meaning to say, the reason I named my children after grandparents, my son Baruch is named after my father's father, my daughter Chava Geula is named after my wife's father's mother. Now my wife's father's mother was named Vitcha. We decided not to name Chava Geula Vitcha for obvious reasons. There are a few names I think that can be as destructive to a child in elementary school as the name Vitcha. Don't try it. My daughter Bruri is named after my grandmother who is named Brancha. Same thing. We did not give Yiddish names. We did not give Yiddish names because effectively there's always shilas about how you spell some of these Yiddish names. One, in Chas Rosh Hashem, in the case of a get, you don't want to get involved in these things. That's one issue. The other issue is you want to give the child a name that the child is going to be proud of and use. To name the child a name that the child will always be embarrassed about, it seems to me, is not a good idea. So I do not have a daughter Brancha or a daughter Vitcha, although my mother-in-law recommended to us at one point that we should name one child Brancha Vitcha and send the child to therapy right away. We decided not to. The fact is, I recommend giving the types of names as kibud av va'em. So I spoke to my mother. I said, listen, Ma, you know, your mother is named Brancha. It's not really a name that we're going to use. What name would you like? And the feeling was that that's some sort of kibud aim, that my mother was able to suggest names. She said something about how she liked the name Bruri at one point. Again, we had the conversation obviously in theory, like long before. And if it's a kibud av aim, kiyum, so then even if it's not exactly the name, we don't assume like the mekubalim, that's exactly the name, and therefore if you add additional names it doesn't help, right? Practically speaking, it's a din of kibud av va'em. That's why I name children after grandparents, great-grandparents, and the like. And you want to give a name that you're honoring your parents by naming your child after the grandparent. Because, you understand, the parent is happy that the grandparent name is being used. We try not to name people after those who died young. But again, everything has to be balanced in terms of dinim of kibud av va'em, etc. I don't think there are any strict rules over here, but sometimes these types of issues can become very large, and people can sometimes end up in difficult situations. It can cause shalom bayis issues. Try to speak about names beforehand. I mentioned earlier I recommend giving names when you're still in the hospital, if possible, at least writing it on the birth certificate, or else you have a child named Baby Boy forever. I do think that you should try to come up with names that are nice. Try not to have very long names. I think to give a name that won't be used will cause more problems. If you name a child with like five different first names, Yaakov, Yisrael, Yekusiel, Yechiel, Yecheskel, like, it's a little extreme. And no one's going to call the child by that. Try to give the child one name or two names, something that they actually get used. My personal feeling is that for boys who get called to the Torah, giving two names means that the name will be used. Even three names will be used. For girls, the name doesn't get used as much, so you should only use names that are actually going to be used in common conversation. Right? That, again, the halacha of what a name is what you are called by. So if you get aliyahs occasionally, so that is a name. But, again, in our communities where women don't get alleles, so it seems like you should only give names that will actually be used. That's my assumption in general. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah? Oh, yeah, we should speak about that. Yeah. So after the baby is born, so the Gemara says that a yoledes is 3 days and 7 days and 30 days. What that means is for the first 3 days, even she says that she doesn't need Chol Shabbos, Yom Chol Shabbos for her, from 3 to 7, only if she says she needs it, so then you're Mechal Shabbos. After 7 until 30, you're only Mechal Shabbos, Al Yidei Ugoi. That's the basic halacha that appears in the Gemara. It's true for Yom HaKippurim, and it's true for Hilchos Shabbos. Also, there's a huge discussion in the postgame. Let's say the woman says she does not need any Chol Shabbos within 3 days. So, if the doctor says that she also does not need any Chol Shabbos within 3 days, so nothing to talk about. If one of them says that they need Chol Shabbos, from Chol Shabbos, without any question. From 3 days to 7 days also, effectively anyone who says that we should be Mechal Shabbos, we're Mechal Shabbos for them. If the mother feels she needs it, or the doctor feels you need it, so we're Mechal Shabbos. The question is, let's say it's not the mother, not the doctor, let's say it's someone else. That's a complicated issue in the poskim. From 7 days until 30 days, generally speaking, we're not Mechal Shabbos, Al Yidei Yisrael, unless we know for sure that there's a condition. Generally speaking, when you have a child through cesarean section, the 3 day, 7 day thing doesn't apply because you're a cholash yesh bo sakana for more than 3 days. Cesarean section is like major surgery. So you're a cholash yesh bo sakana basically until the doctors tell you that you're okay. That's also relevant since we bench gomel. You don't bench gomel after a baby is born with cesarean section until you feel better completely. Generally speaking, after a baby is born, the normal way, by the time you have a simcha for the baby, you're feeling largely better. If you're not, still you don't bench gomel. You bench gomel only when you feel better. That halacha, I think, is relatively clear. Okay, what else?
Making a seder in the hospital.
Making a seder in the hospital. Oh gosh, that we'll have to discuss separately. You have to make a seder. As much as possible, yeah. We were worried about that. Bria was born Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach. We hung out until for a few days. I think Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach that year is like day 5 of Pesach or something. Right, yes, my birthday is day 5 of Pesach. So that was the story. Yeah, so we'll have to discuss making a Seder. What's the shortest possible Seder you can make? Is sort of the Shiloh. The Sefer Emek Bracha basically says that you don't have to say even the Brice of Rami Gamliel. Even though we say Koshal Mashal Shadon like Yasidei Chovaso, the Ran writes, and that's in the Mitzvah Min Hamufkar. And technically speaking, you're Yotze without it. There's much more. Yeah, that we should discuss separately. In this book, in the Torah Sayoledes, he has everything you need to know about these topics. It's really he's a wild man. He has like strange ideas about things, but it's a lot of fun to. I stole this from the YU library. If you want,
Borrowed,
of course. Right. The advantage of being faculty is you can get books out for 6 months and then renew them forever. These things help. Okay, are there any further questions? Okay, thank you very much, and thank you, Dina, for coming out tonight. Yashikalach.
Thank you.